inviting me to speak in this conference, and happy birthday, Jack. And well, the title of my talk is Intermingled Basins, and it's taken from a paper called Elliptic Curves as Attractors in P2, Part 1 Dynamics, joint work with Marius Davila and John Milner. And well, you can find it in the IMS preprint feed. Okay. So I want to start with some history, and then let's see. So first I want to say, to define what intermingled basins are, and I want to start by defining this term, riddle basin, with, which was first introduced by Alexander, Kahn, York, and Yu in its paper, Riddle Basins, in 1992. And they use that term to indicate an attracting set whose complement intersects every disk in a set of positive measure. And then they define two basins to be intermingled if every disk which intersects one basin in a set of positive measure also intersects the other basin in a set of positive measure. So these kind of sets are the ones that we're going to be talking about. Well, this is the definition given by them. And then, disks just like an open. Well, this is in general, I think they work in two dimensional, so that's why it's disks. Okay, not vacuum. So. Sorry? The basin in a set of positive Lebesgue measure. The interior of the basin. The disks? No, they are not. Well, the closure of the basin is dense most of the time in the Julia. Yeah. All right. So, I'm going to leave this here. No, this is measure theoretic attractors. Yes. All right. So, So who worked on this? Icahn in 1994 in the paper Open Sets of Diffeomorphisms Having Two Attractors, each with an everywhere dense basin, announced the existence of an open set of CK diffeomorphisms of the three-dimensional manifold of a three-dimensional manifold with boundary T2, the two torus cross 0,1, so a thick torus, and this has two intermingled basins. Then in 2003, Bassam Fayad gave a simpler construction of a C-infinity diffeomorphism from the three torus to the three torus that has two intermingled attractors. And then recently, in 2005, Melbourne and Windsor, using methods by the Bassam Fayad paper, construct a C-infinity diffeomorphism from the two torus cross the sphere to the two torus cross the sphere with K intermingled attractors, and then they generalize this construction to create another C-infinity diffeomorphism with contourly infinite intermingled minimal attractors. So this is more or less the work in intermingled basins. Okay, so what I want to show you today is a map a holomorphic map from CP2 from CP2 to CP2 given by this formula that has this phenomenon of having intermingled bases. This map comes from a larger family. Here I'm just not saying the whole story. I'm just considering the map by itself, but it becomes to a family that we call the Bob maps. This guy F has the property, as I said before, of being holomorphic, and it lives in variant, the family, of course, x cubed plus y cubed plus c cubed minus 3kxyc equals to 0. So that can be easily shown if you have a computer or by hand, if you are clever enough. But I don't want to work with this whole family. We want to restrict to the case k equals to 0. So in particular, this map lives invariant the Fermat curve. And this map has also another property. It also lives invariant a pensive of lines going through the point 0, 1, 0. I denote it here by P0 because sometimes, you know, like before, ahead, I'm going to call it P0. And this is called, in general, the center. And in a previous work with Marius Davila, we call the family of maps satisfying this property elementary maps. So this F is an elementary map with center 0, 1, 0, living invariant the Fermat curve, and is holomorphic. Now, by doing this change of variables, so by setting x equals to little capital X equals to little x over C, and capital X prime equals to X prime over C prime, then we have a map. We are left with a map from X to X prime given by this formula. This map is called, or is a lattice map. And then I kind of tried to make a picture to illustrate why it's a lattice map. So we have the center right here. We have the torus, or the elliptic curve, in this case the Fermat curve. And then, so we take a point P right here and the iterate F of P. Then we project with the projection given by pi of xyc equals to xc. And then, you know, we apply the map on the Riemann sphere and we get something here. Then we project and we see that these two coincide. So this is a lattice map. The Fermat curve that right there, sometimes is denoted like this, sometimes is denoted like this, is given as C over omega, where the lattice is C plus tau C, and this tau is e to the 2 pi I over 3. All right. So now I want to recall some properties. The torus. No, no. It's just a picture. Yeah. So, it's degree 3, yes. Okay. So now I want to recall some properties that may be useful for us of lattice maps. I mean, maybe useful when we want to study, because we have to keep in mind that what we want to do is we want to study the dynamics of this map F right here. So, I mean, maybe there are more properties, but these are the ones that I'm going to care about. So, this F hat, my map over here, is post-critically finite. The Julia set is equals to the Riemann sphere. And F has an ergodic invariant measure, which is smooth. It sets up the critical values that, in this case, coincide with the cube roots of negative 1. Okay, so those are the properties of of lattice map that we want to keep in mind. Okay. Now, so if we think of this P2 minus P0, meaning the center, meaning the point 010 in my case, in the case of my example. So if we think of this as real or complex vector line bundle over P1 with this projection, yeah. So we have this commutative diagram right here. And we can see that this, each fiber of P2 minus P0 gets mapped to another fiber by a polynomial map with coefficients vary according with the fiber. So you don't see this here, but I'm going to show you. Why is that? Maybe I'm going to need my map. So let me keep this here for a little bit. I only need a map. Okay, so if we consider the invariant line x equals to 0, and I'm taking just here 0, y, 1, leaving this free, we can see using this formula for the map that this line gets mapped to something of the form 0, by to the 4 plus 1 plus by, 1. And if we take the invariant line c equals to 0, so negative 1, y, 0, gets mapped again to something of this form. All right, the important part here is that these polynomials in y are polynomials of degree 4, and as you see, the coefficients of the polynomial change with the fiber. So this is for x equals to 0, and this is for c equals to 0. All right? Okay. So now I can take my polynomial. Okay. So what happens? If B is different from 0, so I don't want to talk about the degenerate case right now. So if B is different from 0, this point, the center, becomes a superattracting fixed point that is going to play the role of the point of infinity for each one of the fibers. Okay. So this is just like curiosity, I guess, just to explain what is happening in the pictures. In the complex case, these maps, elementary maps, have a 120 rotational symmetry, and in the real case, they are unimodal. So, and this property just follows from the properties of the lattice map. So I said, since F has no attracting cycles, then the elementary map F, so since this high has no attracting cycles, the elementary map cannot have any attracting cycles, only the one produced by the center point. So 0, 1, 0 is a superattracting fixed point for this F. Okay? Okay. Something else. Okay. So this map has more properties. Put it away. So, besides all these invariant things, this map F also leaves invariant the line y equals to 0. So that line is also invariant. So this f is leaving invariant so far. It has a superattracting fixed point that is the center. It leaves invariant the elliptic curve, the Fermat elliptic curve, and it leaves invariant the pencil of lines through the center, and it leaves invariant the line y equals to 0. And since this line is also invariant for the lattice map, because as we see that formula for f hat, this line y equals to 0 is also invariant for that map, then it also has a canonical invariant measure and a well-defined transverse Lyapunov exponent. I need to define what is the transverse Lyapunov exponent, because as I don't remember who said, Misha or somebody told me, remind me that I want to talk about major theoretic attractors. So to define what is a major theoretic attractor, we need to check that the transverse Lyapunov exponent of the curve over the line y equals to 0 is negative. So let me, well, and this is also in the paper of Alexander Kahn, York, and you. All right. So let me remind you the definition of the transverse Lyapunov exponent along the invariant curve. Okay. So, right. So C here is my, this is supposed to be more in general, so this is just any invariant an invariant curve, and then the transverse Lyapunov exponent is defined as the limit as k goes to infinity of 1 over k log of the norm of that derivative of the transverse derivative of the k iterate at p. I hope I said it right. All right. So where this guy with this transverse derivative is the induced linear map from the complex tangent bundle to the curve at P to the complex tangent bundle, transverse bundle, sorry, to the curve at F of P. Yeah, this guy means transverse. And this complex transverse bundle is given by this quotient, the tangent bundle of P2 at P over the tangent bundle at to the curve C at P. And this transverse derivative has this operator form that is going to be useful for us later. Okay? Mm-hmm. Where norm of B transverse is the norm on each one of the fibers. Okay. Now, by the Birkhoff-Ergodic theorem, this Lyapunov exponent can also be written, can also be computed as an integral. So it's the integral over the curve of the log of this transverse derivative at P. All right, so this formula is, or this form of this representation of the transverse Lyapunov exponent is the one that we use to actually compute the transverse Lyapunov exponent for the Fermat curve. And the calculation of that integral is in a paper that is still in beautification. So I don't know how long it's going to take to be beautified, but, you know, this is done. It's just not beautiful enough, so it has to stay there for a while. Okay. We have explicit formula for this, but the paper is not yet available because of, you know, beautification process. So, okay. Anyway, using that formula, I can show you pictures of the graph of the transverse Lyapunov exponent for the Fermat curve. So this this graph right here corresponds to the real case, and the one over here corresponds to the complex case. And we can see that the most attracting case is more or less at b equals to 1/3 in both cases. Yes. And don't worry here. And we did the same, so it doesn't matter if I put it here. We did the same for the line. We compute the transverse Lyapunov exponent for the line y equals to 0. So again, the curve below is the real case, and the curve below corresponds to the complex case. Right. And then it's easy to see here, especially because we have two projectors, that if we take B, okay, this is B, if we take this parameter small enough, there are going to be points in which this y equals to 0 line and this Fermat curve are both attracting. And that's what we need, measure theoretic attracting. And that's what we need to produce these intermingled basins. Okay. So we have a set of values of the parameter for which that happens. All right, so now the theorem. Okay, so this is a long theorem, that's why I can drink water. All right, so again, this is a general, this is in general. So we have a real or complex elementary map that lives invariant in elliptic curve C. And then we said if the transverse Lyapunov exponent is strictly negative, then the attracting basin of the curve, or the attracting basin consisting of points with orbits compared to the curve, has a strictly positive measure. Yeah. And in fact, any neighborhood of a point of the curve intersects the basin in a set of positive measures. Same thing for the line, so I don't have to read it. Same thing for the line y equals, any line that is invariant for this map, and it has a strictly negative transverse Lyapunov exponent. So the basin of attraction of this, the basin of this is also, I mean, this L is a measure theoretic attractor. All right, so we want to prove that. So the first part of the proof is just, you know, fixing things to be able to prove what we want. So we said, okay, so in this case it's general, but let's assume that the center of the map is the point 010. Since we have an invariant line, and if this invariant line has a negative transverse exponent, then we don't want this line. This line shouldn't go through the center. So we're going to think that this line is given by the equation y equals to 0. So this line is invariant, and this is the center. We are assuming that there is an invariant elliptic curve. This is what we're assuming there. And, right. And then, since this line is also invariant for the lattice map, by the lattice map, yeah. So, is yeah. So there is an absolutely continuous invariant measure, and so we can define the transverse exponent. All right. So right here, I'm just setting my tools to work. All right. I hope I'm not going too fast. I have a problem of going too fast. I'm trying to go slow. I hope it's slow enough. All right. So In each fiber, we have this canonical flat metric given by dy over the square root of dx squared plus dc. It's just because we want to normalize. And then this is going to give rise to the norm, the tangential norm of B. And, And then I'm going to have an operator, like for the case of the transverse derivative, now given by this quotient. If you remember, in the case of the transverse, I just put here a transverse. I had a transverse here, and a transverse here. And now I'm just working in the tangential direction. Okay. And what is that goal? The goal is that I want to take this formula of the transverse Lyapunov exponent that is given in terms of this transverse derivative. I want to change it. I want to see that in this case coincides with the integral along the C, along the curve of this of the log of this norm right here. So that's why what we want to do is we want to compare the norm in the tangential direction with the norm in the transversal direction. All right? Okay, so this is our objective, to compare these guys. Well, if you just have a metric on the fiber, what is canonical about it? No, just convenient metric, yeah. So you just take a convenient metric, and then you normalize it, and yeah. All right. Since So we want to look at this quotient. This is what we want to look at this quotient, and then well, let's see, is this well defined or whatever? So since this since most points intersect the curve transversally in three distinct points, and there is only a finite number of points which intersect tangentially, this quotient is going to be positive or zero, being zero in the points in which the intersection is tangential. Yes, I mean lines in the pencil. That's what I mean. All right, so this is okay. This is positive or greater than zero. So what I want to do now, what we want to do now, is we want to take log of these quantities. So I'm just going to the proof. So since there is only a problem in a finite, where is it here? Since there is only a problem in a finite number of points, and this guy has only logarithmic singularities, we can integrate the transverse, we can integrate this function. And then we check, okay, here this needs some work, but we can check. I'm saying this needs some work because you see, I'm comparing here, I'm taking the difference between these two guys, and I have to remember the formula for my f time of t of p, and I have an analogous formula, a similar formula for in the transverse direction. So if I do some algebra, I can prove that this is equal to zero. Also, given to the fact that this measure is f invariant, it's invariant under f, so these integrals are the same. So I have this. That means that my transverse Lyapunov exponent, that is by definition given by this integral, can be also computed using this integral, which simplifies life. So all this work was only to get to this equation. Right. We are assuming that this transverse Lyapunov exponent is negative. And what we want to prove only is that there exists an open set that intersects the basin in a set of positive measure. Okay? I'm still thinking that this guy is negative. So now I have to play a little bit with it's just calculus. It's very easy calculus. All right. So again, let's estimate the distance. This picture tries to illustrate this formula. So let's see. So the distance delta PQ between two points that are in the same fiber. So I have my center here, and I have two points there in the same fiber. P is on C on my torus. And I denote by delta this distance. Then by calculus, I know that the distance between f of p and f of q is given by this. This is nothing, right? And then this is uniform. This estimate is uniformly through a neighborhood of the curve. So because it's uniformly, even epsilon greater than zero, I can find a delta, so that I have this inequality. And then, blah, 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 choosing epsilon small enough, we can still see that this integral right here is negative, okay? Because I'm assuming a hypothesis of this theorem is that the transverse Lyapunov exponent is negative. So we wrote this integral, this formula here, like this. And now we need to use Birkhoff ergodic theorem. To keep with our proof. Right. So, by the Birkhoff ergodic theorem, and take it some orbit of some arbitrary initial point of C, this integral can be written or converge, or this average converge to this integral right here. Right? Now, just for simplification, I'm going to call this k0, k1, kn minus 1. And since I know that this integral is negative, and, you know, what properties of logarithms, this is negative for large n, then we take, a constant m of p0 as the maximum of 1 and all those guys. We make sure that this maximum is greater or equal than 1, and we make sure that it's finite and defined everywhere. So if we take the distance between the points in the fiber here to be less than this delta 0 over this constant, then under iteration, those points remain close. And then our proof, we are ready to finish our proof by defining our set S as the set of points on the fiber. For example, you fix P, and this S is the set of points in the fiber of P, which distance from P is given by this amount. And then you see that the orbit, because of this inequality, is going to converge to the curve. And then we did what we wanted. We see that this S intersects the neighborhood of the curve in a set of positive measures. So very long proof, but it's over. Okay. Now, so we know that the elliptic curve is a measure theoretical attractor, and we also know that the line y equals to 0 is a measure theoretical attractor. So we have the following proposition. In a general case, In this case, we don't. No, in this case, this is, you know. In a more general case, in a more general case, yes. All right. So, if we have a complex elementary map like in our case, then I just have to repeat everything. That has an invariant elliptic curve that has a center P0, then this center P0 is superattracting, and the basing coincides with a factor set. Now, what is the factor set? In this case, you know, as in one complex variable, the factor set is that open set where the family of iterates is normal. It's a normal family. So it's the same kind of factor set that you know. Okay? So the basing of this 0, 1, 0 coincides with a factor set. The basing is connected and everywhere dense in P2. And if we take a small neighborhood of a point in the Julia set, then the union of the forward images is P2 minus P0. This is true, or this is easy to prove, because of a previous result with Marius Davila that says, this is not the exact theorem, but this is what I care about, that if you take any point of an invariant elliptic curve, then the iterated pre-images of the point are dense in the Julia set. This P and this P are the same. But I had a typo there. All right. So, all right, so recapitulating, we know that the attracting basing for the elliptic curves has no interior points, that the attracting basing for the line y equals to 0 has no interior points, and we know that F is topologically transitive on the Julia set. So then we have the corollary that gave the name to this talk. They gave its name to this talk. And the corollary says that if a complex elementary map has both an invariant line, of course, that doesn't pass through the center, and an invariant elliptic curve, then the two topological closures are equal to the of these sets are equal to the Julia set. And if the transfer Lyapunov exponent for C is negative, then same thing for L, then every neighborhood of a point of the Julia set intersects the basing in a set of positive level measures. That's the corollary. So I'm going to show you a picture of this map in P2R. So some people have seen this picture too many times, but well, that's life. So this point is the center, 0, 1, 0. This gray stuff is the factor set of that, or the basing of this point. And then in white, we have here the Fermat curve, and also in white, the line y equals to 0. Then the basing, so we have two cases here, the real case and the complex case. So we can see that, well, these are estimates based on computer experiments, and we have more or less that 17% of the points in the real case go to the Fermat curve against 6% of the complex case, and this is illustrated in red. And then for the line y equals to 0, we have in the real case 17% of the points against 13%. And you see this point is very powerful. In the real case, you have 66% of the points going to it. In the complex case, you have 81% of the points going to it. Now, it says here that the basin of the line y equals to 0 is blue. However, it looks purple. But this happens because of this phenomena of the basins being intermingled. All right, so now I'm going to show you how difficult it is to do computer experiments with this kind of math. So here we have just, you know, an arbitrary orbit, and in the x-axis we have the number of iterations. In the y-axis we have the distance of the points under, you know, under iterations to the x-axis, y-axis, z-axis, and the Fermat curve. So we can see that in this case we started with one orbit that stayed close to the y-axis for a while, and then it went away and came exactly to the basin of the Fermat curve. So this was nice because it checked. All right. So now I could do two things. I could prove this if you feel like watching another proof. I could prove the corollary, or I could tell you, show you some pictures produced by Hubbard and Sarah of the behavior of the map on the fibers. So, what do you want? You want the boring proof? The pictures are nicer. Huh? You bored? Okay, then I show you the picture. I don't want you to be bored. Yes. 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 So, this is, as I said, these pictures were produced by by Sarah and her advisor. And they sent us these pictures. So this is the dynamics of the map. Which map? Huh? Which map? The one of these maps, maybe this, because, all right, one of these guys, maybe with different coefficients, but of that form. So here Sarah says, I don't know. Not. Huh? Yeah, okay. Yes, you're right. So I'm not thinking about it. So let's take it away. So this is one of the fibers. This is one of the P2 minus P0, right? This is one of the lines to P0. And then they iterated the map. And then they used B. So We said before that B equals to 1/3 was giving us the most attracting case for the Fermat curve and for the, well, for the Fermat curve. Then they perturbed the parameter a little bit, so they took B equals to 0.3, the real part, and the imaginary part, negative 0.1, and they used the line minus 1.6, let's say, plus I times I.3, and they iterated the map, and this green, correct me if I'm wrong, this green is the basin, is the set of points that gets mapped to the, the red is the set of points that goes to the point 010, that is the center. This goes to the Fermat, yes, and blue goes to the line y equals to 0. Right. And then, oh, I have to, yes. And then, in another one of these lines, Sarah observed that, well, this is another way of trying to see that the map had intermingled bases. So they wanted to see what happens on these lines. So she took now the parameter to be 0.2 in both cases. And here x is equals to 0, and here x is equals to 0.001. And then she discovered that, well, you know, in this picture you get these points going to the center and these points going to the Fermat curve, and just for a little perturbation you get the points going to the y-axis, to the line y equals to 0, right? Well, I think I have more pictures, but I think this is enough to illustrate what is happening in that type. Thank you very much. Yes. Well, in this case, can I show that almost every point converts to one of these? No, I only know that the basin is, no. Four.
And in the real case, how many critical points do you have in the real case?
How many critical points? The curve?
In
this fiber?
That
I don't know. He was looking at the critical points, right? Rotated. Well, this is a picture that shows the symmetry. Maybe I never showed any picture that shows the symmetry. That is the 120 degree symmetry.
Well, there's one mathematics that I think the first picture it shows you, you should get it printed on canvas and tell us what people can enter their living room at 1 hour.
So Sarah. It's Sarah's picture, so. And them. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Did I survive?
Awful.